And we're back for Off the Hook Overtime. Did you make it, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, great. And Alex, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm better for worse.
Rob, you make it?
Well, I believe so.
Gila, are you in
still
overtime?
Here.
Okay, we're all in overtime. And Zan, you're also with us.
I am.
And I assume Emma is with us as well, off to the side. That was fantastic, that discussion. That really, I think, opened up a lot of eyes, certainly opened up my eyes. And what you folks are doing is really inspirational and important in history. So what we do with this with overtime is we open it up to callers if they choose to call in. Number is 802-321-HACK, 802-321-4225. We have a phone here that's ready to take calls, and sometimes we get calls, sometimes we don't. So we'll see if we get any tonight, and if we do, we'll put them on.
Yeah, we're accepting them. Uh-huh. So I'm at the ready. I will facilitate that as best I can.
Yeah, I'm wondering if something's up with our connection, because I'm only seeing very small number of connections. We always have issues with YouTube, but if we're doing something wrong, if we have something misconfigured, please let us know what it is, and we'll fix it for next time. But we should be there. It should be working. Rob, can you verify that we're on?
I can see the YouTube stream, but I'm not seeing that. I'm not hearing us on it.
You're not hearing.
I'm seeing our picture, but I'm not hearing us.
Oh, for God's sake. Okay. Wow, this again. Okay.
That's happened before.
You want to explain what just happened,
Kyle? No, I don't.
No, please do. Because
we're having such a good conversation, though.
We did have a good conversation. And the good news is that it's recorded on our end. It just wasn't going out over YouTube. But tell the folks what's going on, because our listenership just plummeted. That's because, we didn't have the right button hit, right?
Yeah, it muted again.
It muted again.
Again.
All right. So, again...
Okay. Or rather, we didn't unmute.
We didn't unmute. It's our fault. Zan, Emma, welcome again back to Off the Hook Overtime. And everybody else is joining us as well. Our phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. If there's any questions you'd like to ask or you want to join the conversation in any way or have something to contribute, by all means, dial that number. The phone will ring, and the phone is plugged in this week, right?
Yes. I said it before. I'll reiterate that I am... accepting calls on behalf of the show, and I will facilitate this as best I can.
Yeah, we weren't on last week, so this is the first time in 2 weeks that we've done overtime.
Yeah, we really do want to hear from people, and we have some guests with us as well, so please dial us and share what's on your mind.
Now, Zan, is there anything that you wanted to add that maybe you didn't get a chance to say on the radio? Or Emma?
I don't think so. I think it covered. Oh, Alex over there.
Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I was hoping, Zan, that either you or Emma might be able to speak to some of the past projects for distributed denial of secrets as well. It's something we didn't get a chance really to dive into because we were so focused on the Gab hack. But I know that, you know, distributed denial of secrets, at least in the summer of 2020, really gained a lot of national attention with the blue leaks.
Yes.
That has occurred. And I think that's, you know, that's another gift that keeps on giving too, isn't it?
It does. So Blue Leaks was a leak that was mainly information from fusion centers all across the United States. And it showed a lot of different things. We're actually still finding out a lot of the stuff that was in there. But I mean, it included everything from surveillance of Black Lives Matter protesters to admission from law enforcement that they knew that it wasn't Black Lives Matter protesters that were starting violence, but white supremacists, to things like, you know, teenagers being put on domestic terrorist lists for making TikToks, to, I mean, there were use of force documents in there. There were just so much. The Intercept has done a lot of great reporting on it. An independent newspaper in Maine called The Mainer has done exceptional work talking about the findings that are specific to Maine that were found in Blue Leaks. I mean, just it's become just a treasure trove of documents. I mean, just outlining the ways in which police in the United States abuse their power. There was one document in there that I specifically researched a lot, and it was basically a primer on for police on how to use just enough force against civilians not to get sued. And I mean, it was really, if you read through the document, it was an absolutely horrific document. It would take studies where civilians had sued police for use of force and then go through them case by case and basically say, now, what did these officers do wrong? And the answer wasn't at all that they had used excessive force. The answer was that they hadn't used it correctly.
Wow.
And this one case stuck out to me. A black woman was driving her son to school. She was pregnant. And she was pulled over for going, I think, something minor, I think 32 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone, something minor. She was asked to step out of her car, and she did not, she refused to step out of her car. And the police report says that she made her arms stiff on the steering wheel, and that was considered resisting arrest. So one of the officers decided to tase this visibly pregnant woman. They tased her in the thigh, they tased her, and they tased her in the neck. And they did this all within a very short span of time. And the takeaway lesson from this case, according to this document, was that they should have given her more time before they tased her in the neck.
Wow. This document, now, it was distributed already inside yes. police circles. You know, to me, a document like that should by default be leaked by somebody with a conscience, you know?
I actually tried to tweet about it on my Twitter account and was banned by Twitter for it. I was forced to take it down. It contained no personal information. It was just a document that had been distributed. The person that does these trainings, he's a lawyer from Nevada. He proudly says on his website that he does these trainings for police. The only personal information contained within the document was his office address and office phone number. Any information available on the document was information that was freely available on his own website. I tried to tweet about it. Twitter forced me to take it down because they said it was PII.
Go ahead, Alex.
And, you know, along those lines, too, Zan, it's interesting to me, too, because distributed denial of secrets deals with leaked materials, hacked materials, data that whistleblowers are providing to you so that you can distribute them to the public. Mm-hmm. But with respect to Twitter's new rules that prohibit references or links to hacked materials, that seems to really hit at a prime distribution channel for distributed denial of secrets. And my question is, have you come across this as a real barrier to getting the word out about yes. these materials?
Yes, Twitter actually, after Blue Leaks, Twitter actually banned the official distributed denial of secrets Twitter account. Recently, they have changed their policy to say that they will not ban hacked materials unless they're being shared by the hacker themselves. They now add a warning to the tweets saying that this information may have been obtained through hacking. However, they still have not reinstated the distributed denial of secrets Twitter account. And they still, anytime you try to tweet anything with a DDoS secrets URL, they ban that. The distributed denial of secrets URL is banned on Twitter. You can't tweet it at all.
Well, so, I'm going to try doing that tonight. If you give me one, I'll try doing it tonight. And
yeah, and any week, have to kind of like break apart our link if we want to ask people to donate. We have to, we've had to find creative ways around that to get both our information out, to ask for support, to pretty much do anything.
Go ahead, Alex.
This whole notion of hacked materials, I'm using air quotes around hacked.
Hacked. Right?
They're exfiltrated. They're stolen. They're, you know, maybe they're hacked, whatever they are, right? They came from somebody else. But it seems to me that these new policy changes are going to have effects on people that they don't necessarily intend to affect, right? I mean, these things are really to discourage criminals, right? They want to discourage criminal activity, not necessarily legitimate whistleblowing. And so by creating this broad policy, what may happen now is this may be the germ or the inspiration of a new sort of criminal underground about information laundering. So materials that were hacked have to have some kind of regenerated provenance so that they can be distributed and shared on social media. And I think we saw the early stages of this with respect to the New York Post story about the Hunter Biden laptop, right? Mm. Where it seemed pretty clear that, you know, those were probably stolen materials, but it's quite possible that a story was concocted so that they would not implicate the prohibition of Twitter for hacked materials or implicate that rule in any respect. So, you know, I think that, you know, the takeaway from this is that these platforms just really have to think about the unintended consequences of these particular rules. And we may look back on these 2020 and 2021 as a weird proving ground for the fact that we can, you know, really screw it up when it comes to preventing whistleblowers from getting the word out.
Go ahead.
But they also have to think about, I think this is a question that tech companies have to face. And I mean, this is a tricky question even within the law. What is the line between whistleblowing and hacking? How do we consider one good and one bad? Because the information contained in BlueLeaks is undeniably, it's valuable. The things that have come out of BlueLeaks are valuable. And one of the things that I've tried to push in a lot of the work that I do is that we need to expand the definition of what a whistleblower is. Whistleblowers, yes, can come from inside, but why do we exclude whistleblowers who may come from outside? Why? We need to expand our definition of what a whistleblower is.
Okay, we have a phone call. I think we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello. Good evening, all. I am the digital Ozymandian, and I have like a question. It's more of a historical question. And here it is: when like digital technology first started to be used by the masses, the mainstream, did they think that they could like immortalize their ideas and information? Meaning that they could make it last forever. That's my question. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Good question. Interesting question. I think a lot of people when they delved into the digital world thought that it would be forever. And I don't know if it is. I don't know if
it is and it isn't.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people say when there's a scandal, it never disappears. But, you know, try finding the first photographs you took on a digital camera. You can't do it. You know, things disappear.
Or conversations from various phone generations you've gone
Absolutely.
through.
But books and pictures from the 1920s, they're still around. I don't know. You guys have any thoughts? Rob?
Yeah, there was a very interesting someone was doing an AMA on Reddit because they were part of a certain part of early web culture, And they were pulling out stuff from their records that were message board threads that you can't get on the Internet Archive or anything like that anymore, but they happened to print them out onto paper. So this person has boxes of, you know, printer paper with these message threads that are now like this irreplaceable cultural artifact. And that struck me as really funny how, like, there's a piece of digital culture that now only exists on paper somewhere because someone happened to print it. And, I tried to put them in touch with our friends at Internet Archive and go from there.
Yeah, someone's going to come along and scan them and digitize them, and the whole process will go up again. Go ahead.
Exactly. I remember feeling, and again, not necessarily being in the center of this at the time, but there being a sense that some of it was really ephemeral and that was almost the point of it. You know, the idea of what you could do, what you could try on and try new and try different that wasn't necessarily going to follow you around for the rest of your life. And stuff where, you know, you had a screen name that wasn't necessarily traceable to who you were legally, governmentally, whatever, that was a whole new place where you could go on and role play things and try whatever you liked. The idea of what was ephemeral and not necessarily permanent.
Go ahead, Zan.
And I think one of the things that DDoS Secrets wants to do is there are these data sets that are so important and they should be preserved. They should be preserved for people to be able to see. These are data sets that are tied to important events. These are data sets that have value beyond just curiosity. With right now with Gab, like Em said, you know, this is relevant to what's going on in our world right now. You know, with the Parler leaks, I mean, some of the videos that were released in the Parler leaks were used in Trump's second impeachment trial. These are things that are relevant to our world and absolutely should be preserved, not only for their historical significance today, but so that they can be seen in the future, so that we can learn from them.
And I don't think that should be a surprise to anybody who participates. You're in a public forum, a semi-public forum. If you're engaging in historical events such as attempted coups, you might think that some of the words that you say will be preserved as an historic relic, and that might not work to your advantage. Go ahead, Alex.
Building on this idea and this notion, though, I think it's really quite fascinating, because what Zan is mentioning in this idea is that you have these historical events that may unfold in real time and in real life. And by real life, I mean physicality. But there is now this extra dimension to that physical event that should become part of the historical record of humankind. And that's something that we haven't had before until relatively recently. And I think it's absolutely fascinating, because how could you understand, if you think about this from the perspective of future historians, how could they understand and interpret the January 6, 2021 insurrection without the Parler data? Without looking to the digital sphere,
and
you would have almost no context.
That leads one to kind of imagine also that other dimension actually having influenced the historic event in physicality, in that physical realm.
Absolutely.
It came from the affinity groups themselves being able to leverage the technological realm to find affinity and, of course, then plan stuff like this that becomes an action in history.
Absolutely. There was massive online organizing before, you know, January 6th. I think Michael Lee put up a couple of graphs that show the spike in Gab users, you know, after certain dates. And it's just absolutely fascinating to see that, you know, after these significant dates, that there were just these absolute spikes in Gab users, and absolutely a significant data point that after things like January 6th, you know, there's these huge spikes of people just migrating, you know, over to Gab because, you know, they wanted that sort of echo chamber where they could, you know, freely express their ideas and their thoughts and their, you know, find their sort of affinity groups and where they could freely express their whatever they wanted to express without fear of, you know.
It almost kind of reminds me in a, like kind of like a biological mimicry sense of idea or group that is connected in this way moving as it's damaged in one place. And that's, I think, a lot of how network and especially internet networks are supposed to sort of be able to heal in certain ways. And by keeping that group together, that action then is preserved, you could argue, to a degree, because it's the group itself and a lot of that networked connectedness that gave rise to calls to action. So by it moving from sort of one safe place to another in the ways you're describing, it's sort of trying to heal and preserve its amorphous existence in that space, right? In some
right.
ways.
Well, yes, and again, this is why we feel specifically the Gab leaks are so important for researchers to look into, because to find how that happens and to actually see that happening in real time, there's not that many chances to do that, to actually see it happening in real time, to watch it happen, to see it happen, and to see the mechanisms of how exactly it does happen. And that's just such invaluable information, because if we can see how it happens, there's a chance that we can stop it.
Now, how do you compare what just happened with Gab with what happened previously with Parler as far as examining things in real time?
Well, with Parler, I think because it was mostly videos and things like that, it didn't give us that sort of. I mean, it did give us a look, but it was mostly media. It was mostly media to comb through. These are actually their words. These are actually their words. You can see what they say within themselves. You can see their attitudes. You can see exactly how they plan things. You can see exactly what groups connect to which groups and how. You can see their associations. You can see, you know, everything. You can see who they're friends with. You can see, you know, exactly where they come from. You can see so much more when you actually can see them in their own words.
I'm wondering if there are any people who are infiltrating Gab who are now being exposed as infiltrators and people that don't necessarily share the same philosophy, and how that might be affecting them.
I'm sure there are, but I'm also sure that that is such a minority that, I mean, I've done work like that before. I've done infiltration work. I've done recon work. I've done all that work in an anti-fascist capacity. I've done that work, and I can absolutely tell you that it's going to be such a minority of the Gab users.
I mean, think of it this way: you. When there's a Nazi in front of you, you don't not punch the Nazi, because what if it's an anti-fascist pretending to be a Nazi to get close to them? Uh-huh. better treat this person well and be friends, because, like, maybe, you know, or if it's satirical, like, you have to take it at face value. Well, in those instances, if you have to play the numbers, and the numbers are overwhelmingly that the people on Gab, mm-hmm. especially the active users, because there were a lot of inactive users, it looks like, the people on Gab were people that were on Gab.
Right.
Yeah. So
let's give the phone number out one more time. 802-321-HACK, 802-321-4225. Our guests tonight, Zan and Emma from DDoS Secrets, talking about the Gab leak, which is definitely having an effect in the conservative world tonight and for the last few nights. Go ahead, Rob.
All right, while we're waiting for that phone call, Zan and Emma, I wondered if you have any advice as people who have done the both kinds of work, like what advice might you have for journalists, researchers, people like that who are maybe not technical themselves but interested in working with an organization like yours? We may have lost them. It looks like they froze up a little.
Well, they're either thinking very carefully about what you just said, or in fact, maybe we did lose them. Okay, do we know how to revive that connection?
Yeah, that'd just take a second. So why don't you go ahead and let people call again?
Well, not exactly being bombarded with phone calls, but I'll give the number out, and I'll give it out slowly so that you can do that while I'm talking. 802 is the area code, and that, of course, is in the wonderful state of Vermont, but it's not really in Vermont, is it? It's a virtual number, so you're just typing that as a formality. 802-321-HACK. Now, if you don't have those little letters on your telephone, those letters turn into the numbers 4225. So the phone number is 802-321-4225. Not sure how much longer I can drag this out. I'll keep talking while you try and reconnect the connection. We're connected?
Yeah, they're with us
again. Oh, okay. I don't see them.
I think so.
All right. Zan, are you there? Oh, okay. Great.
Yep.
Rob, you'll have to ask your question all over again unless Zan heard you.
I did not. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. My question is, what advice might you have for people who are journalists or data scientists or the sort of people that you want having this data, but they're not themselves technical? What advice would you have for them when working with your organization or one like yours?
Find someone you trust to partner with. We get a lot of requests for technical help on dealing with data or finding things. And when we can, we respond and we help. But that's usually not the case. So much of our time is focused on dealing with the releases themselves, the fallout, and just coordinating everything. We don't have time for that. So what we really just encourage people to do is find someone you trust to partner with who can either help you directly or is just willing to put up with your questions while you text them and say, okay, what is a SQL database and how do I make it go vroom?
Make it vroom, make it vroom.
Wow. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, with that in mind, it sounds like, you know, here's a niche industry, you know, that you know can be fulfilled, right? And have you thought about it all, perhaps, you know, creating a list of or soliciting for volunteers that can help others in retrieving and identifying, mining the data that would come from distributed denial of secrets so that it doesn't fall on, you know, the few in the already overstretched?
For some projects, usually when the source's wishes allow us, we try and set up cooperative processes with different outlets. We did something like that with Number 29 leaks, where we partnered with OCCRP and a couple dozen outlets, and we did that again last year with the Bahamas leaks, the Tax Evader Radar Project, with European investigation setup. But a lot of times sources aren't really willing to have stuff wait for 6 months or a year, and they want things to come through immediately. And in those instances, we're less able to do that. As far as like putting together lists of people, we try to stay away from things that could contaminate the processing of the data or influence it. and telling people, oh, this is who you need to talk to about this, is one of the subtler ways we could do that. One thing we've seen with some similar projects at different times is it's very easy to interject either your agenda or your views onto something, and it taints the entire discussion. And especially when you are also acting as, for all intents and purposes, the primary source, people are always going to consult your stuff first. And one thing we believe very strongly in is giving people the freedom to figure out how to use the data themselves. And if we start off by telling them, do this, don't do this, talk to these people, don't talk to these people, we're already boxing them in a lot. So we try to limit those strictures to things like, hey, don't use these password hashes to try and hack anyone or anything.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we're very sympathetic to the desire for that, but at this point, it's just a line we've felt more comfortable not crossing.
All right, I'm going to give the number out one more time, and if we don't get any calls, we're going to sign off in the next couple of minutes. So it's your last chance, you folks out there, 802-321-4225, if you wish to talk to us here at Off the Hook Overtime. We've got Zan and Emma from DDoS Secrets with us right now, talking about the Gab hack or leak, and we also have the Off the Hook staff on hand to answer any questions you might have. Doesn't have to be about this topic. If there's anything else you want to share with us, but we're only going to hold this open for another couple of minutes. So 802-321-4225. And you know, if there's one other thing I'm just very curious about regarding this whole chain of events, how do you think the media coverage overall has been? Has it been accurate? Have they gotten it, or have they completely misrepresented what's going on here?
The media coverage has mostly been accurate.
Yeah, I've only noticed a couple of instances. Hackread initially made an error and very quickly corrected it. AV Club, which thankfully not many people turn to for this sort of news, AV Club reported that we owned up to the hack, which is not even close to what happened. We're owning up to the leak. You know, we've been very clear about this is the name for the hacktivists that did it. Like, we don't hack data, but for the most part, it's the coverage has been accurate, and that's been the one area where there's been some inaccuracies. I'm not really counting things like Cassandra Fairbanks or RT's coverage in any of this, because obviously.
Wow. Well, it's
quite a response from Gab, though, has been less than stellar.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a bit.
The response from Gab has been less than stellar.
They seem a bit miffed.
They're, as the kids like to say, big mad.
yeah, they are.
Which, you know, is nice for me and my family.
It's the definition of a side perk.
Yeah, it's one of the side perks to the work that we do.
Well, they in one of the pieces I saw that they said they're working with law enforcement, and I'm wondering if maybe other people are working with law enforcement too, investigating them based on the things that are being revealed here, because there is a lot of planning for illegal things that took place on Gab.
Yeah, and there's.
I mean, Gab has been the subject of so many law enforcement investigations. I mean, Robert Bowers, the man who walked into the Tree of Life synagogue in Pittsburgh and murdered 11 Jewish people who were just there for Shabbat services. He was a avid user of Gab. He posted he had a long history of posting anti-Semitic messages to Gab. He posted one to Gab right before he committed the shooting. There's another instance of Gab being served with papers because a man had been arrested for child porn, and law enforcement wanted to see if he had shared that child porn over Gab. There was another case in the UK where neo-Nazis had been arrested because of things they posted on Gab. There was a man who was also arrested because he was posting guides on how to hunt Muslims, Jews, and immigrants on Gab. Gab has been the subject of multiple law enforcement investigations in the past. I mean, this is nothing new for Gab. Gab is an absolute cesspool of the worst of humanity. Gab is no stranger to law enforcement.
Well, I'm sure it's only a matter of time before law enforcement says thank you to the efforts of the DDoS secrets for revealing this ugliness. And they really should.
Waiting for that phone call any day.
Uh-huh. Any day now, they're going to come knocking at our door, and
in a perfect world.
Thank you.
In a perfect world,
they're going to come with a plaque.
Yeah. you're doing good work, and it's appreciated. And I hope that you're able to continue and provide us with a lot more truth that's out there, because we need to hear it. We need to see it. It's important.
And I mean, that's honestly one of the main purposes of what DDoS does. It's information that needs to be out there. It is all in pursuit of just the truth. And we are not responsible if the truth does not look favorable to you. We're not. And I think the CEO of Gab knows that in this case, the truth is not looking favorable to him or Gab. And it has nothing to do with God or whatever other bullshit he's trying to claim it does. It has to do with the fact that his site got taken down by a fucking SQLI.
Can never erase that, can you?
Someone's shoelaces together and then they come down trying to chase you.
That's like, literally.
That doesn't happen.
That's literally like the first lesson on Hack This Site. Come on. Like, come on. He got the sads.
Yeah, it's a learning opportunity. It really is for people running these sites.
It is, but also, like, he's just got the sads because, you know, his site got fucking owned and, you know, and now he's trying to hide behind Jesus while he hurls transphobic insults and sends fucking Nazis and QAnon adherents at my family and my friends.
Didn't take long for True Colors to show, did it?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, these people preach Jesus and Christianity, but the second you get them mad.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. We want to thank you for what you've done. Any last words from anyone else on the show? Alex?
Alex, you're muted.
Yeah, you're muted, Alex, unless you're just moving your mouth.
Oh, jeez. I want to thank Zan and Emma for being here. And also for taking full advantage of the fact that we are not right now regulated by the FCC.
No. And we know that. Yeah. And I think they know that as well. So
yeah,
we're
absolutely
professionals here. We know what we're doing.
Done. Well done. Mm-hmm.
How do you think we're going to take the calls?
Yeah.
I mean,
again,
I've done a few of these before. I know where FCC ends.
It's not the first day. Give us DDoS info for the listeners so they can help and donate and
follow along.
Yeah.
DDoSsecrets.com. We've got a wiki, organizes all of our releases, makes it easy to search them. You can browse by country, by corporation, by type. And over on the sidebar, there's a little donate button. can contribute all sorts of different ways, Bitcoin, traditional cash. We are a 501c3, so everything is tax deductible. And there's also some information at the bottom of the donate page on the kinds of hands-on help we need. If anyone wants to try and pitch in, we are a very small group trying to move some very large rocks.
And I'm going to mention your site on Twitter tonight and see what happens.
Thank you very much.
It's not going to work.
Well, then I'll make it work somehow. I don't know.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
Please be well. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Stay safe,
everybody.